Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comics Dungeon. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Chris Casso.
Hello.
Nicole Lamb.
Oh, hello.
And, of course, Cole Hornaday.
Hey, Ben Lawrence. How are you?
I'm well. How are you guys?
Okay.
It's a rainy night here in Seattle. It was
a dark and rainy night.
Dark and rainy, dark and stormy. It was one of those rainy nights where when I needed to spend the most time outside walking the 15 minutes from my office to my house with a gear bag full of podcast equipment gear, it was pouring rain.
Yeah.
And then when I got to my car to drive over here, there was not a drop in the sky.
Oh,
and,
of course.
So hey friends, so we're here at the newly rearranged. You got some new shelves here, Comic Extension.
Yeah, made some room for more stuff, and we'll be adding more over time, you know, little bits here. Yeah. We've got some plans for toy displays. So
did you snag some shelves from the accordion shop that recently closed right next door?
No, we actually bought them from Xanadu, who was also closing.
Oh.
And so helped them out and picked up some of their extra stock of shelves. So, yeah.
Excellent. All right, so friends, let's get on to today's topic, which is revisiting the diversity in comics discussion. Now, this is something that we talk about rather a lot. Because it's something that we pride ourselves here at the Perfect Bound podcast. We talk about more than just comics from the big two. We talk about a lot of indie publishers. We talk about a lot about small press, and we champion those creators of those comics if they're like non-white dudes. Mm-hmm. So Vulture.com recently had an article about four of these publishers: Iron Circus, Lion Forge, Emmett, and Black Mask, and how difficult it is to push diversity and inclusivity in the comic book marketplace. And I just wanted to, when I saw that article, like the next article I clicked on was a dude's blog, basically, who saw the March solicitations and the number of female and, female and non-binary creators for Marvel is 9 creators on 11 books in March 2018, which is down from about 20 this time last year. So that led me to my question: how important is it for the big two, Marvel and DC, to lead the way regarding pushing diversity in comics?
I want to say it is very important, but I want to say I wish it wasn't, because I wish people would just figure out I should go buy from somewhere else. And that's not happening as much as I want it to happen. Because I feel that there's a lot of Image comics that are created by a diverse amount of creators, and there's a lot of traffic going that way, but not as much as there could be. And I feel there's people that get kind of hung up and they just like, I have to do Marvel or DC.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wish they can break past that and start throwing their money elsewhere. Because again, I don't want the entire industry to be defined by how well these two are doing.
Right.
I want it to be defined by at least how well these six are doing and work our way up to a larger number than that.
That's an interesting point, because you always hear people describe themselves as Marvel people or DC people. Nobody ever says, well, I'm an Image person.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, I'm a Dark Horse person.
Usually those people come in and they just don't bother to identify themselves, which is
a personality trait.
Yeah, they just get what they get. Yeah. And then you talk to them and they're like, I just stopped caring about some of that other stuff.
Yeah.
So it's like it happens. It just feels like it's like stealthily happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is important for Marvel and DC to have that representation. Something to point out that does suck is that they are under no obligation to do that. But it would be the smart thing business-wise to do that.
To get a lot of different voices in there. I mean, there's so much stuff online that we see. There's so much more diversity in like the web comics because people are creating the stories they want to read.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And not getting hired on by these companies. And I mean, we've even looked at some all-age stuff that people have done, like superhero all-age stuff, and like Marvel and DC aren't even picking those people up. And it's like, that would be a smart business move.
Mm-hmm.
And not even talking about diversity necessarily. But I guess that would be a diverse in age group of good storytelling.
Right.
I think there's just a lot of missing the mark in that regard. Just for the wealth of things that they could bring to the table.
There are a couple of titles I can point to where Marvel appears to be making an effort, and that is Miles Morales, and of course Ms. Marvel is Muslim. And mm-hmm. so are there any other titles that Marvel or DC where it looks like they're making an effort to do this?
Well, I mean, they're publishing Batwoman, so you have a lesbian character, right?
And it's
there.
Written by a lesbian writer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Marvel has like Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, and there's a few other titles. They're doing Luke Cage. They're doing canceled, but they're still doing Heroes America, mm-hmm. Which also has a diverse creator. Mm-hmm. So they are trying. The numbers just seem to be down.
Yeah.
What happened with Ironheart? Is that still going?
She's still there. Yeah. She's still in the Iron Man title. Okay. You know, so this is the Iron Man title. Jane Foster is still Thor for the time being. Mm-hmm. You know,
obviously we have Black Panther. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And
Totally Awesome Hulk.
Yeah, Totally mm-hmm. Awesome Hulk doing it. DC, actually, I'm having a harder time. There's Black Lightning, but that's just a miniseries. But I'm actually having a harder time. They have the Ray who's in the Justice League, and he is gay. We were just talking to a customer earlier today, and he was having trouble thinking of any lead male queer characters in any comics across the industry.
Yep.
And I actually kind of got baffled by that, and it mm-hmm. took me a while to land on Iceman, which is like the only Marvel lead character who owns the title.
Well, and he even said that there are some secondary characters, but they actually are kind of crap characters, right, as far as, I guess, their characterization.
Because he was looking for somebody who was truly heroic.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's something they could... I noticed at the beginning of the new Avengers event, they started with the Living Lightning and making it abundantly clear that he is queer. And I was like, oh, good start to your event there, mm-hmm. you know? And then... he didn't show up for the rest of the next two issues. So
does it feel like Marvel is just doing that to maybe quiet the voices of their audience who are demanding this? Or does it feel like they really want to make an effort?
I think they do want to make an effort. They have trouble kind of getting the synergy going. They are stuck in a very bad situation, which is that they get negative public coverage over everything, because either they're not trying hard enough or they're trying too hard, depending on the audience, because there's the really, really vocal minority of people who are blaming Marvel for being SJW nonstop, and it's just like, you just need to shut up. But they are going crazy with that as well. Mm-hmm. So Marvel's like, we gotta try and maintain a popularity with our older fan base, which are generally, you know, 40-year-old plus white guys.
Yeah.
But we need to also have this other stuff. So it's like they are in a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. They just need to better control the publicity on it.
Mm-hmm.
There was a extended article I read that was mostly about their lack of good publicity, and they don't have a good talking head right now. Mm-hmm. They have Tom Brevoort, and it doesn't sound like he's the right guy to be handling that. So that's a problem right there.
Yeah. And I think that you had mentioned the kind of hollowing out of the creatives that were working at Marvel, that there's less now than there was before. And I think there's just been a fairly big exodus from Marvel as far as creatives, and they need to kind of build that back up again.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And get different people in there and get some fresh blood.
It is worth noting that they did just hire a new publisher. Promoted. The current publisher got promoted to a different position, so there will be a different voice happening.
Publicist? You said publisher.
So like, you know how Eric Stevenson is publisher of Image? That position.
Gotcha.
So he is basically in charge of the overall output.
Right.
And there's going to be people under him that have the finer, you know, C.B. Sobolski, those guys who have the finer hands in what creatives are doing anything. But this is the guy who will be steering the ship, basically.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of a track record does he have? Like you said, he was promoted from within. What was his...
I read that whole thing and I forgot it all. he had a pretty good track record. He's been around. Bob Neely? Bob Neely? I don't know. That'll be a subject for a future podcast.
There you go.
But so there's an opportunity there. And we'll just see if anything significant happens from that.
Are you talking about John Nee?
That's it.
Yeah.
Not... terribly close. Kind of.
Almost rhymey.
The M part.
I got the N-E-E somewhere in there. Yeah.
Anyway.
But yeah, so that's a sign of some change. That's a sign of Marvel being like, oh, we got to do something.
Yeah.
Got to do something.
Yeah.
So here's to hoping.
Yeah. When we have stories like Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur and Miles Morales as Spider-Man, how important is it for the people of color and women to write those stories? Now, I know Cole's opinion on this because we've talked about this before. Hmm. And not that I want to shut you down, Cole.
No, you're not. I've done my yelling. I'm okay.
Well, you don't have to yell. The microphone is right in front of your face.
But I've been emphatic about my opinions about those things.
Exactly. So, I appreciate the passion. But how important is it for that representation?
I feel
is that imperative? Do we have to discount all the other ones if they're not written by?
I feel this very important, but it is important to remain inclusive. So that means not excluding any voices. So it's about finding that balance, mm-hmm. and that's up to the editors in charge. And it's about making wise decisions. It's one of those things of so Brian Michael Bendis is a very white man, and he's writing Miles Morales. He's adopted like 8 children of all various different cultural backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
He's somebody who listens to different points of views. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I would not want to discount him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think he always gets the voice right.
Right.
So that I think is just a writing issue.
But he understands representation.
Yes, he understands the importance of that.
And but so that comes to the decision of like, okay, maybe trust a little bit of Bendis in certain spots. Don't hire a Howard Chaykin for some of those things.
Right.
Like, let's not suddenly hire him to do the book Alters.
Right.
Like, ever. And maybe don't ask...
it's going to get very exploitative very quickly.
Very quickly.
Yes.
Maybe don't hire Frank Miller to do some of these projects.
Exactly.
You know, so it's like, make better decisions, get a more diverse range of creators in your stable so that you can make a lot of different decisions. Because, I want it to be inclusive for everybody. It's just some of them will have a better feel on the pulse.
And there's also the other side of it. When you go to the extreme and say black people should write black people, women should write women, you kind of pigeonhole them in only being able to write those things. And maybe people don't want to write that. Just because there's a science fiction writer doesn't mean they've ever been to space. I know that's kind of really, you know, going out there on that. But I'm just saying, like, you can limit people's abilities. And I think that there's even been some writers who have been like, I want to write this. And they go, well, you get the black guy because you're black. And it's just like, well, that's not what I want to do, though.
Right. I don't think Christopher Priest wanted to do Black Panther. I remember reading an interview with him in the back of one of the books, and he was just sort of like, okay.
Yeah.
I guess I'll do that.
Yeah.
I think he wanted to do Daredevil instead
or something
like that.
Yeah. So it's just don't limit people either because of their own ethnicity or background or whatever, because then you limit their potential creativity, you know. But also don't discredit them because of those things as well.
Right.
So
right.
Again, it's that balance and that fine line of being able to have enough people and have enough different voices and different creative minds that can do a lot of different stories.
Because
I think the one thing that we find a lot in superhero stuff is this one note feeling and people not being able to see themselves in the heroes. And I think that it's very important that we do fix that, you know.
I think a couple years back we had a talk dealing with female creators.
Yes.
And the thing I wanted the most was there to be a huge influx of female creators because I was getting tired of everybody thinking that a few certain ones were the best we had. And it's just like, man, I don't want to sound like an asshole here, but like I don't always like everything by this one writer, and we keep giving her these jobs.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, can we go up from 2 female writers in the one entire company to maybe 10, 15? That way I can love and hate a range of people.
Yeah, then they don't have to be spotlighted because they're the token female writer of this place, you know, and they just get to be a writer.
Yes.
And you get to have an opinion as opposed to it being some sort of political move, you know, or a political discussion, which a lot of times these can turn into because there's such a scarcity of diversity in the creative teams.
Like I tell you this, the next project that Kelly Sue DeConnick does at one of the big two is going to be highly publicized for that reason.
Right.
And it's just kind of like, I wish it was highly publicized because she's a good writer.
Yeah, because, you know, there's a fan base there. People like her and what she does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Is there an issue with... We're talking about representation in writers. Is there an issue with artists as well? Is that as big of a challenge for people to break into the industry with the big two or with the other medium four or whatever? And do we want people of color to draw people of color and women to draw women? Or do we just want those people in the industry regardless
I want them in the industry.
Is.
And yeah. I also want people to accurately be able to draw different types of people.
Mm-hmm.
Because there have been problems where people have just drawn the same facial structure for the same, for like all the women in this one comic, and they don't look different at all. Even if they're different races, they come from different places.
Right.
You know, they might have different body types, they might have different noses, different cheekbones, like all that kind of stuff. And it just looks very like, who is this person? It's hard to tell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or they don't do a coloring right, where all of a sudden now someone looks white when they were actually supposed to be black or something like that.
Right.
And there has been some missteps that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty much kind of the same thing for me. It's important for them to get into the industry and for there to be this range for all the companies to be able to work with. But I don't necessarily need one person of one color to draw the person of the same color.
Right.
I want the range. Yeah. I want them to do whatever they want to do. I don't know if... I feel like I read something like there was a study about African-American artists and their ability to get into the industry. And I can't, it's been years since I read that. I can't really remember the breakdown. It was, of course, not great. So I'd be a little bit more interested to read up and catch up on that, mm-hmm. that kind of idea and talk more about it.
I think that's probably the least in the industry because I generally see a lot of Latin, a lot of Hispanic,
yeah.
and
a lot of Filipino.
A Filipino and Asian.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I've seen a lot of black artists.
There was a very interesting Instagram hashtag that was for, I can't remember if it was just for a week or maybe it was for a full month, but it was just focusing on black artist draw. I think may have been the hashtag. And it was lovely to go through and see all these fantastic different styles recognizing like a handful of names, but also like, who's this? You do a webcomic? Great.
Yeah.
Tell me more.
I still want Brittany Williams to do an all-age Superman comic.
Yes.
Yeah. She did Patsy Walker with Kate Leth at Marvel, but that ran like 16 or 17 issues or something like that. And then that was it. And I don't think I've seen her since. I think, is she still doing
Goldie Vance?
I think she's doing Goldie Vance over at Boombox right now, if she's still on that title. But I just want her to get more work. I love her art style.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to see more people. Like, again, people doing stuff on the web that are these amazing artists that have these great stories. And it's just like, just scoop them up. Yeah. Where's the scouts for this thing? You know, like,
it's not that difficult a job. Get a Tumblr account.
Yeah.
Scroll for a while.
Seriously.
Put in a keyword and be like, Transformers fandom. Whoa. Put the filter on that. There's a lot of porn on there. But still, like, yeah, we discovered...
Fan fiction can get naughty.
Yeah, we discovered her work where she's basically creating a all-ages version of the Daily Planet. Not a Superman story, but just, like, the Daily Planet adventures of the bullpen.
Yes, and they're adorable. The dorkiest Clark Kent. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's so cute.
Yeah, it's the most accurate Clark Kent.
Yeah.
And it's just like, okay... That's an easy job. Your book has been given to you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just somebody at DC, we just call her and be like, yeah, you can get paid for that if you want.
Yeah.
Other than just, you know, we might sue you otherwise.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, maybe don't.
Maybe don't threaten people.
Maybe don't threaten.
That's my default.
The offer, but
you know,
yeah.
Come work for us or we're going to sue you.
But yeah. I mean, that's just an easy way to get people. You just go on Tumblr and there you go. You found these amazing people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's just such a wealth out there. It's just, it's ridiculous how much we deal with this sort of rock star status with writers and artists. And, you know, I mean, as great as these people could be, it's like you can't quite get past that, you know, to get noticed if you're not this rock star of the moment. It's like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. You just go under the radar.
And so what are the advantages and the disadvantages of taking established characters and changing them to meet some sort of inclusive need, as opposed to, say, creating a whole new character? Like, we have Lady Thor, we have Miles Morales, you know, and those are the two examples I was thinking of.
Yeah. It is very difficult to create any new character with a lasting presence.
Yeah.
I think I remember reading like a year or two ago, somebody tried to do like a count of like, who's like a very lasting character that's widely publicly known that's appeared after the 70s and then after the 80s, and the list kept on getting smaller and smaller. Mm-hmm. And part of it is how many black heroes have electric powers? Mm-hmm. You kind of get these weird ruts where you right. It's another strong guy. Whoop-a-da-doo. Mm. So it is very difficult. So in that part, I don't want to blame anybody for just doing something like, here's somebody else who was bitten by another spider. It's Miles Morales. The focus is on who he is as a character.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we should complain about that stuff, because if you do want to start complaining, then you got to start with the Superman family. You know, like how many, the Supergirl, Superboy, Supercat, Superhorse. Like, right. If you're going to complain about Jane Foster, you better shut up. If you don't include the super family, yeah. You know, stuff like that.
Well, and with the Spider-Man stuff, if you don't like Miles, then just read Peter.
Go read Gwen.
You know, go read Gwen if you want Gwen. Like, yeah. there's different options. I mean, with the Thor right now, Odin's Son is not worthy. But
it is the main title.
Yeah, so it is the main title. Jane Foster stepping into it. But it's not like a gender flop. I mean,
yeah.
I think, like, okay. The Iceman thing where he's, like, now gay, but it's, like, an alternate timeline version of him that's gay. It gets too messy or something. Wasn't the younger version of him?
Yes, but then because the younger version was, they said the older version is now, too.
Yeah. So you kind of become more gimmicky, I feel.
I feel like they did.
Okay.
That one's messy because they forced his outing, too, and I never cared for forcing that.
Yeah. So it can sometimes be a fine line to being a gimmick or to try to... It almost feels like it's a thing. Fill a quota sometimes.
Yeah. I don't want to come down on those characters for that reason. It's like the last new character that's a POC of any current relevance to me is like Renee Montoya. Mm-hmm. And like it took a while for her to develop. And mm-hmm. there's not using her at all. But a lot of people know who she is. Yeah. You know? And
for those who don't, do you want to say who she is?
Yes. Well, she's a detective that was introduced in the Batman animated series. Mm-hmm. And she stayed a detective in the comic books for quite some time until she became the new Question. Mm-hmm. And she had a pretty good career as the Question. And then she had a relationship with Kate Kane, Batwoman. And then the new 52 happened. So, yeah.
But I believe she has been in the current Batwoman series.
She's popped. You're the one that has a better feel on that pulse than I do.
Yeah.
but so they haven't spotlighted her.
Yeah.
But still, it's like... Okay, there's a new character. Try and think of another one with lasting media exposure. Mm-hmm. Doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So
I mean, Ms. Marvel's probably been the biggest one, right? Mm-hmm.
Yep. And she's still technically a derivative.
Mm-hmm.
She took her name. Yeah. She's a legacy.
Right. Right. Right.
Yeah. Mosaic was the latest attempt from Marvel. He's the new Inhuman who's black, who has the ability to take over other people's bodies. And nobody cares. And part of that is because the Inhumans were oversaturated.
Yeah.
You get
TV
compounding.
The series bombed, and no one cares about the Inhumans anymore.
Exactly. You so get these compounding problems.
Yeah. Maybe
you
know? Maybe he needed like an NPR slot. Yeah. You know, some big PR work. That's what happened with Kamala Khan. Yeah. She was like all over the
PR
news.
Spots.
Yeah.
I remember many years ago there was a little bit of a PR push because they introduced Aranya. And it's like, look at this young Latina as a spider person. And my Spanish professor at the time was just like, what about Aranya? And I had to like look at her sadly and being like, she's going to get forgotten in about 2 months. You know, so sometimes it just doesn't matter how important a character's existence may be. They just might not get the traction.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't go anywhere. And Arani was a derivative, so she had a tougher time. And it's like, another spider person. Hooray.
Well, and that's the point of frustration I have with the new Superman at DC. I'm still reading that, trying to figure out how that's all going to work out. And something that no one has been able to explain to me is that we have all these Chinese derivatives.
Mm-hmm.
The Wonder Woman character turns out to be, I think, White Snake or Green Snake Woman, who's from Chinese mythology. And that actually, it was elements like that that drew me back in. It's like, oh, okay, they have to wear this public brand that matches the DC, the known DC properties, but they are actually these other things.
Something more interesting.
And the Legion of Batman. But still, I'm like, that this book is, to me, saying it's okay that these characters are all derivative of American, known American brand and properties. And I'm not, and I keep hoping, and that's why I'm reading the book. I'm trying to see how they divest themselves from the American personas. And I'm hoping that that is the ultimate quest of the book. I may be making up stories. Maybe their hands are, maybe the creator's hands are tied by Warner Brothers, but I'm going to keep reading it for that reason, because I want to see how it, how, and I'm sorry, I can't remember the author's name right now.
Gene
Young.
Yeah. Because I have a lot of faith in him as a storyteller, but it's been over a year this book has been going on. I still, and it doesn't feel like they're straining against the yoke of the American brands. They're actually still kind of embracing it, and I don't get that. I don't get that at all. But I'm watching to see how this evolves.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm reading the book.
I thought the story premise was that they were just trying to pop up Justice Leagues across the world. And so they were using that as a symbol.
Okay,
right?
Then, you know, maybe that's just my fall down, because I don't read many other DC books. I don't read Justice League anymore. I don't read Superman. I don't know what's happening in the rest of the world. Just China.
I didn't get that feeling, so I'm not
sure.
Oh,
you didn't? Okay.
No, yeah.
I thought maybe that's how it was marketed or something. But, okay.
The article that this sprung from mentioned Lion Forge, and so they're entirely based on releasing diverse characters and creating their superhero universe, and they hit the problem for me. It was just like, there's your Fast guy, there's your Superman, there's your whatever guy, and I'm just sort of like, I don't need another one of archetype. Mm-hmm. But I am speaking as a white man who has read too many of these things.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully that is landing for somebody else and meaning something. But will the industry remember who Excel is in another 5 years?
Right.
Will they remember who Noble is? A lot of people do remember the Dakota verse,
Milestone.
Sorry. Because remember Dakota, which is one nobody else remembers.
That was the city.
Yeah. But they can remember Static, and they can remember Hardwire.
Icon. Blood Syndicate.
Cole remembers.
And, well, the thing is, though, I tried reading a lot of them.
I keep digging through them. I keep going back and digging through them.
Yeah. They never quite made an impact for me.
No.
But again, that's just,
because they were all very derivative.
They're very derivative.
They tried.
Mm-hmm.
There were so many possibilities, especially with Icon. It's a black Superman. It was the Superman story. He was a black character from another planet. He had a black sidekick, but it was still in a lot of ways the
same
thing. The Kal-El story.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to see them change it up just a bit more to give us something more to sink our teeth in and remember it, you know? So that's the problem.
Even if that does miss a beat, Lion Forge is doing so many great things, and they have a diverse line of things, bringing in imports and doing kids' books and all sorts of stuff that, even if that doesn't hit the mark, they're doing a lot of good things.
Yeah, I have a lot of hope and optimism with Lion Forge. They have some smart people doing that, putting
very
the company together and releasing a lot of things. So if they can get that traction going, maybe it can spell out, a better future for the superhero brand that they've got.
Right.
And the customer that we were talking about with the male-led queer protagonists, I think a lot of the stuff that he's been getting that do have these leads or do have characters in it is from Lionforge. So there is that diversity happening there.
To wrap this all up, if we had the ears of execs at Marvel and DC, aside from telling them to create a Tumblr account and go look at what the fan fiction, the clean fan fiction the that's clean out faction. There, what would we say to them? What would we say, you know, what would we say to these execs to make sure that their titles are inclusive and representative?
I think that you already have a wealth of characters in which you could draw from. You just need to give them the spotlight and also give them probably enough advertising to actually support the creative team behind it.
Yeah.
And give it some time to really build traction. I think a lot of times the downfall is they try things and they go, see, that didn't work.
Number one didn't sell, so let's not do it number two.
Yeah. So, you know, I think really laser focusing in on some things and maybe giving them a little bit more try instead of putting out five things, try one thing, you know, or two things or something like that. Because it just, and I don't know if that's a business model that they really can stand by, and that's why they keep doing these types of things. But to say that it fails when you never really did much to try to back it is a hard argument. It's a hard pill to swallow, I think.
Right.
I mean, there's people who come in looking for, you know, Native American superheroes, and it's like, we have them, but they were, oh, they're in this back panel here, or they were in this one team. You know, it's like, why not, you know, shine the light on these characters that you already have, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You don't necessarily need to come out with a whole new line of things. Just kind of work with what you got.
Yep.
All righty. Thanks, y'all. It's a great discussion. I'm sure we'll always be touching on this in one form or another over the course of the future. And let's move on to Book Report. And Nicole, let's start with you. What do you want to tell us about?
Nothing that really works with diversity here. I don't know.
It's all right.
I don't know. I guess I'll do this one. Enclosed called Fat. It's a a self-contained manga by Moyoko Ano. And she is an artist who has done a lot of fashion illustrations. If you look up her art on Google, you'll see gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous art. This is just a black and white manga, and it's focusing on it's a story about like really unlikable characters. The main protagonist is a girl who is a little chubby, and she has a boyfriend who's not really there, but she's kind of this meek person. She's bullied at work, and the person who bullies her at work just flat out says that she doesn't like fat or ugly people. And she just is a nasty person. And she even goes so far as to get the boyfriend and have an affair with him. It's a very strange book. It hit me very strange because it does have an eating disorder in it. But it's not the highlight of it. I mean, I have done things like Lighter Than My Shadow and My Lesbian Experience with Loneliness, where it's about the character finding their own redemption, overcoming things, gaining control of their life, not letting the eating disorder control them or be a crutch for them when they can't function. But this person doesn't necessarily care about any of that. She wants to be accepted, but she's kind of this pathetic person where she just doesn't quite get it. Maybe she's dense or something like that. So she just tries to not eat or goes and uses bulimia to lose weight to try to get in the good graces. But there's never really anything she's trying to overcome. Mm-hmm. She's just always trying to please people. She's always trying to do what she thinks people want of her. And so it says straight up on the back, like, no one comes out looking good, nearly no one at all, in this dark comedy of manners, not the heroine whose weight problems are not her true failing. So it's really just, it's an interesting character piece because it goes through every single person that shows up in this, has something interesting to contribute to the story, but it really doesn't have any real purpose beyond being this weird character piece. So I finished it and I was just sort of like, huh. I okay, I don't know how I feel about this. And I even told my coworker, and she was actually, I was just like, oh, that was actually interesting. Maybe I'll try it, because it wasn't like a hit you over the head about some sort of, you know, mental health issues or some other thing. It's just really an interesting character piece. I think that's all I have to say about it. I don't know, but it's, yeah, it's interesting. I actually am interested in the creator and what else they do, because their art is very interesting. It's, when people are depicted as beautiful, they have this luscious hair, they have these huge eyes, tiny nose, and big full lips with this angular face. And when they are depicted as, you know, either not attractive or like more chubby or something like that, like the main character, it's a round face with kind of mousy hair and tiny eyes. And they look more human-like as those characters than they do as the beautiful characters, because you get that huge anime eye effect. So there's a clear distinction between the beautiful people and the not beautiful people. So the art itself is telling its own story, which it's a visual narrative. It should. But it is so drastically different that it adds to that.
Cool.
I think I really am done now.
Okay.
There you go.
In Clothes Called Fat. Thank you, Nicole. Cole Hornaday, what do you got for us?
Well, it's a little late in coming, but... I picked up the standalone Hellboy Christmas special called Hellboy Krampusnacht, written by Mike Mignola and drawn by Adam Hughes. When I found it in my pull box, I turned to Chris and said, well, Mr. Hughes probably started drawing this about 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. Adam Hughes is an incredibly gifted illustrator, and I do believe he does all of his own ink work as well as colors. But he is infamous for really, really belaboring his work and, you know, missing deadlines and books having to be canceled because Mr. Hughes can't make the deadlines. So this is a really lovely standalone book. It's a glossy cover. It's $3.99. Nice, creepy little Christmas story. It's set in 1975, so obviously before the end of Hellboy's lifespan on Earth and in Hell. And he's in some part of Eastern Europe, like he is, like he does, tromping through a snowy graveyard on the lookout for, and he encounters a gentleman who claims to actually be Krampus, you know, the evil Norwegian Christmas elf who does not bring good children good things, but comes and steals away evil children in his bag and tortures them. So I don't want, I mean, it's a pretty cut and dry little story, and it's beautifully drawn. It's a nice tight little piece, and I do recommend it. It just kind of reminded me how much I miss my favorite character, Hellboy. And I love, and that's one of the things I've always loved about Hellboy, are these tight little standalone stories where you get little insights into who Hellboy is and who his supporting characters are, but that's all the more you get, and then it sneaks away. And that's when Hellboy was at its best, when you didn't get into the belabored, deep, and drawn out stories that are told with the BPRD, where you kind of get to the point where it's like, can you just like go die now? Can the world end now? Because this has really been going on for like 16 years and I'm bored. But this is I recommend
just
this.
Can you go die now?
Now, don't get me wrong. I read all the BPRDs, but I had to quit reading it on a monthly basis because it just was like, it was a soap opera. It was an apocalyptic soap opera, and I got bored. You won't get bored with Krampusnacht. You'll be creeped out. You'll be your eyes will pop with the lovely artwork, and you'll rediscover your love for that horn-headed, red-skinned guy with the cloven feet and the big stone fist.
Yeah. It's worth noting, too, since we're on topic, that Arthur Adams is one of the people in the industry that's really good about showing different facial features and types depending on the race of a person.
Adam Hughes?
Adam Hughes.
Yes.
Did I not say
you said Art Adams?
I did, sorry. Yeah.
We're talking
I
about Art Adams
those
before.
No, that's the seizure caught talking there. yeah, Adam Hughes did like a Gen 13 special that featured like three different unique characters of cultural backgrounds. And it was so good that he changed all their bone facial bone types and everything that David Mack ripped him off years later and completely copied every character.
David who?
David Mack.
No, I'm being facetious. Yeah. Oh, you mean that forgotten hot rock star from the 90s who had fetishized Asian women in his artwork?
That guy.
Remember that guy?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Hellboy, Krumpus Knot, thank you, Cole. Chris Cassell, what do you got?
So since I mentioned it earlier, Avengers, No Surrender. What they did was they took the three existing Avengers titles, Avengers and Uncanny Avengers and Avengers USA and Avengers Light, and they merged them into one weekly title that will be an event for the next couple months, probably 3 months, 4 months, something like that. And it's unifying all the teams to deal with a threat. It is written by three writers, Mark Waid, Al Ewing, and Jim Zub. And it is drawn by Pepe Larraz. And its first two issues are pretty good. It's your standard just superhero big event, bad thing happens, everybody get together. It's well paced. There's no breakup between the different writers. You don't feel like you got thrown around by different styles. We spoke to Jim Zub not too long ago, very lovely man, and he talked about like their process, and they were having a lot of fun doing it. So that shows. It is a little messy because it doesn't start you off with a roll call, and there's so many characters involved, and you're not going to care about half of them. And
you also might get confused as to who's who.
Yeah, I got a little confused a couple times on.
Is it like a George Perez morass of superheroes everywhere?
It gets to that point. Yeah. You get just some large groupings beginning to pop up at the end of the first issue. But the other reason this is important is because Marvel's pushing this idea of a lost character, much like they've done numerous times with the Sentry and the Blue Marvel and so on and so forth. And she's a character called the Voyager. And apparently she was there the very first time the Avengers met. And she... they in the second issue, they have these throwback sequences done in a Silver Age style, showing her at all the pivotal moments in Avengers history. So they're really trying to sell this idea. And that's fine. It's not badly handled. It's just that I've already read it at least three times in Marvel alone. So I hope there's a really nice turn. The second issue brings in a group of villains to kind of play around with it. And yeah, there you go. Cole's showing us pictures of the Silver Age style art.
Because you can see those on the podcast.
Yes. And they bring in the Black Order, which is the Thanos villain. So they're obviously doing that because we're gearing up for the Avengers movie coming up. I get the feeling that this is going to be a story involving the Grandmaster and the Collector, just because it's time to get Jeff Goldblum into the comic. And so it's well handled. It is going to be weekly, so it's going to take a bite out of your budget, and it's fine. You know, it's just it needs to quickly do something different for me. It's doing it well. It just needs to do something new.
Needs to freshen it up a
bit.
Yeah.
But on the first issue, if you want, you can get the lenticular cover. It's like a 3D effect.
It actually looks really nice. I do like those.
It is
covers.
Well done.
Yes.
A whoop-a-de-doo.
All right, I take back my sarcastic woo. Yeah.
I'm getting some gnarly
faces. No, I support your
faces.
Sarcastic woo. I despise lenticular covers. I think they're tackier and gum on the bottom of your shoe on a hot summer day.
All right. Avengers No Surrender. Thank you, Chris. And that is Book Apart, and that is our show. Coming up is quiz time. But before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com, as well as the Comics Dungeon here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or however you get your podcasts at PerfectBoundPodcast.com. Send us an email, PerfectBoundPodcast@gmail.com. And our friends, get your quiz hats on. It's quiz time. This week, our questions come to us from Nicole, laying on us.
You keep looking at my page like, God, I hope she has a quiz time.
I was just hoping that you weren't spoiling it for the rest of us by showing us your questions.
Nobody can read her handwriting. Are you kidding me?
It's typed out.
Okay.
So I actually stole one of your ideas. You did like a dating thing, like a Tinder superhero.
Oh, yeah. Tinder profiles one. Of superheroes.
I wanted to do one that was queer and with people who weren't necessarily people we know about. So less known queer characters in comics. On Tinder, that's a lot.
Excellent.
I didn't come up with a title.
I believe it would be Grindr, wouldn't it be? Isn't Grindr the...
Grindr would... Yeah, but that's for boys.
Okay.
And I got some girls and some non-gender people. Okay. So bear with me if this is painful. Okay, so this is going to be people's blurb about themselves on a dating app, and you have to guess who the person is. Okay?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'm an ex-wrestler. I may look intimidating, but I'm really a big softie. I love Morrissey, making dolls out of my own body hair, and cat rescue is a huge passion of mine. Looking for a long-term relationship. Message me if you're a little guy and angry.
Wobble Oaf?
Yeah.
Yes.
I just started with the weirdest one. Wobble Oaf is published by Fantagraphics and written and drawn by Ed Lucci. So I'm just going to give you these in case these sound interesting to you. All right, look. I may have committed a crime or two, but it's not easy being an inhuman. Looking to make a living because it's not easy in New York, or rent's not easy in New York. Thanks to Tom Hale and my roommate Patsy Walker, I now work at Burley Books. Oh yeah, and I'm bi. Message me if you're cute and not some kind of mystical supervillain. This one...
I read him, but I can't remember his name.
His name is Ian Sue, and he comes out to Patsy in issue number 6 of Patsy Walker, a.k.a. Hellcat. It's a 2016 series by Kate Leth and Brittany Williams. All right, I'm too young to date, not sure why I'm on this app. Where is the I Love Cats and Scout Camp forum? I don't identify as any gender, and I really love being a lumberjane. I'd love to connect with other lumberjanes, or if you want a cat, want to adopt a cat, I have a lot. Anybody? Yeah, it's a learning. It's a learning quiz.
Yeah.
this is Barney from Lumberjanes, and he becomes a lumberjane in 28. It's published by Boombox, and that particular arc was written by Shannon Waters, Kate Lye, and art is by Amy Sotoyo, who does a great webcomic called Undivine. Just a little spotlight for this person. Mm-hmm. All right, next up. I'm a college student currently in my sophomore year. I've had a lot of adventures in college, and it's been a real eye-opening experience. I'm figuring out this whole sexuality thing. I think I might be gay. I had a run-in during a college tour I gave with a German girl. That was intense. I might be a little neurotic. I also like watching napkin folding videos. Don't judge me. Message me if this sounds appealing. I don't know. Esther put me up to this.
Giant Ace. I don't know her name.
Her name is Daisy Wooten. And her run-in with the German girl happened in Volume 4 of Giant Ace, which is published by Boom, written by John Ellison, and art by Max Sarin. All right, last one. Thanks for bearing with me. I'm a bisexual intergalactic bounty hunter, always looking for adventure with my best friend, Kim Q. A little uneasy about dating again after my former girlfriend ran off to a life of crime, crushing my heart in the process. Message me if you aren't a terrible person who's willing to manipulate the situation for a lucrative vial of criminal blood. Okay, maybe I'm not quite ready to date again.
The other Kim.
Yes, Kim D. And Kim D appears in Kim and Kim, published by Black Mask, written by Magdalene Visaggio, and art by Ava Cabrera. So thank you for that maybe painful quiz time.
Oh, that was great. It's fun writing those questions, too.
Yeah, it is fun.
All right, well, that is quiz time, and that is our show. Thank you, Nicole, and thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.